We're going to have another final stretch of Q&A in a few moments, but I want to cover the service side. It'll be briefer, but I do want to hit these five areas just to balance this out. Now, because there's not nearly as many texts that point to these areas, nonetheless, I want us to be able to see them in light of the shepherding piece that I have that we just walked through. And then do a few minutes of Q&A, and actually we're going to have a couple minutes for you to just be able to pray with one another as we wrap the time. We will end on time. I know people have trains and other things to catch after lunch. So the five B's of service. Number one, building. We touched on this is someone who needs to take care of the physical property that you own and that you meet in and serve in. So everybody's in different settings there, but what I have found is this is a key area of service. Somebody in the church that has no shepherding gifts, are terrified to stand up in front of people publicly and do anything, your church is probably full of those people. How do they serve? This is one of the great behind-the-scenes roles. You have people who are professionals in different trades that they have. They can fix stuff. They can build stuff. I am not very good at that stuff, so I admire people who have those kind of giftings. And so to find those people in the church that don't want to teach, don't want to lead publicly, don't want to go visit people in hospitals, they don't do any of that stuff, but they know how to build things. They know how to fix things. Those kinds of people are wonderful to equip for helping the building. And this is where, again, deacons are the ones equipped to lead in service. So deacons lead in service, which means, so think of it like a building project. There's something that needs to be fixed, and you appoint a deacon to head that up so the elders can go be doing other things, not dealing with the building. And that deacon goes and recruits three or four other people in the church to come help him do what he needs to do there. Or he's the one that goes and hires the person to come and fix whatever needs. But that deacon leads in service. And that's really important to see that that's the role of the deacon. The deacons don't do all the service. They lead service. That's a big difference between those two things. So when you're thinking about equipping lay leaders to serve, it's that church member who, like, you know, comes in and is the first one who leaves on Sunday morning and just really introverted and maybe even awkward socially. And where's he fit? Well, maybe he can be one of the guys that deacon invites to come because he knows professionally, he knows how to do this kind of stuff. He's got a skill in that way that can serve the church. So think of buildings, think of the people who can work with their hands really well. And there's tons to do with the building around that. Number two, budgets. So handling of money, the organizing of the budget, how money is spent. And again, this is important to see when we go through the service part and that deacons lead in this area of service, how the shepherding role gets mixed in with this, or really should say how it brings oversight to the deacon's work. So the budget, I think I kind of alluded to it earlier. I think the elders are supposed to be making their oversight. They have the authority. They're to be making decisions on how money is spent in the church. And they're the ones that go to the deacons and say, okay, you've got this much money to spend on this project. We need you to go and oversee. Get a team together to go and serve and do that. And they go, great, thanks for letting me know. And then they come back and go, yeah, so this is going to be a little more money because of this, this, and this. What suggestions? And the elders go, thanks for letting us know. Okay, let's do this and this. And they go, okay, great. And then, so they serve, they go carry it out, but the elders are still leading and have oversight and are making decisions. When that works well, it is a beautiful thing to experience and watch. But the spending of money, we know, is very touchy in the church. And all kinds of people have opinions on that. I mean, we got to trust God's design, you know, but it is a perfect storm, isn't it? Let's gather a bunch of people together, encourage them that they need to generously give to the church, and then they just need to let us make decisions on how the money is spent. I mean, that just, no wonder there's so many fights and problems around money in the church. But that's God's design, that people give out of the abundance of their heart and to be generous because they want to invest in the work of the kingdom being built in their local church, and then obviously to give outside the church. So when we have a healthy understanding of money, it's really a beautiful thing to watch churches be generous and sacrificial. And then, so if you have churches that are generous and sacrificial in their giving, You have deacons who work and spend it well, and you have elders thoughtfully making decisions of how that money's spent. And that is a beautiful thing to see. And I'm telling it that way because I just want you to know it's possible that it works that way. Even though some of you maybe have never experienced that. I watched it happen. It took 10 years to get there, but it was an amazing thing to watch happen. So budgets. Number three, body. This is, again, tending to the physical needs of church members. So body, the people. And this is where I want to bring up widows again, even though I had a great conversation with a brother during the break of, yeah, widows almost seems to fall in both categories, even biblically. Yeah, that's true. So again, don't the categories are meant to give you categories to think in, not that we just totally separate things. Widows clearly have physical needs. That's highlighted mostly in the texts, but they also have spiritual needs that come with that. And so to think about different categories of people in the church, there's roles deacons will play there, and then there's roles that the elders will play. And so deacons and elders working together on how to care for the body is really important. That's why us knowing what our lane is, knowing how God's called us, knowing how we're gifted is essential for this to go well and to run smoothly. What creates havoc, as all of you I'm sure know, is when we don't stay in our lane. When deacons try to do things elders are supposed to be doing, and elders, for some reason, want to try to do other things and not what the shepherding task is. So it's important as we walk through these things and we think about all the different physical needs in your church, just think about what those might be. I mean, think about the people who have trouble just paying their monthly bills, the people who maybe there's food needs, there's clothing needs, there's lodging needs, whatever it might be, there's medication needs. I was in Cuba in March, and I've traveled all over the world, and I don't think I've ever been anywhere that I've seen such poverty mixed with oppression. And the average Cuban makes $18 a month. And so the whole government, it rations the food for everybody. So, and people are starving because the system is horribly broke. And I preached in a church that was meeting in the back patio of the pastor's in-laws' home where they all lived. And this patio was just full of people, like 60 people, just wall-to-wall people in this place. It had like a little, like a tarp over part of it. And I preached that morning at this church, and people were just full of joy, and it's incredible to see. Well, you know the announcement time where we typically like the announcement, hey, so if you give to this mission offering, or, you know, or if you want to contribute to this, you can do that. At the announcement time, they stood up and said, so-and-so needs this kind of medication because it's basically a life-saving medication she has to be able to take because of a condition she has. But the medicine's rationed and almost impossible to get in Cuba. It's where a lot of people from the States send things like food and medicine and those kind of things because it's rationed and terribly unavailable. So they announced and said, so this so-and-so is really struggling and they have, this is a certain medication that they need and she doesn't have any. So the announcement was, so if any of you have that medication, would you be willing to share that medication with her since it's life-saving for her to take? And I just thought, man, just different perspective, isn't it? What is that? That the person who steps up with that medication, even though it's for them to take, that they would somehow ration it so to help that sister who needed it? I think we in the West live in a very wealthy world, even though there's plenty of poverty around us, but we know that we certainly have first world problems. And to realize that when the New Testament was written in the first century, that there was that kind of need in the church. Read through Acts and look for it. It's all over the place. There's massive physical needs in churches all over the world, basic needs. And so deacons are to play the role of service in meeting those physical needs. I'm stressing that example because I think because we don't have as many physical needs in the West as we would in some of these other third world countries, that we almost kind of diminish this important role that deacons lead in to then equip other people. The whole church needs to be involved in meeting the physical needs. I'll give you one other example for our church. So in our church, there's in where we live in Kentucky, it will snow there, and but we are far south enough in the States that when it snows, people like freak out and don't know what to do with it and don't know how to drive, and it's just a whole mess. And so one of the things, so we don't have the equipment in our city to properly plow roads, certainly not sidewalks and things like that. Well, I remember there's a big snow that came, and it just kind of shut down the whole city, and it went on for several days in the middle of the winter. And so we had widows in their homes that couldn't get out. And I remember just how encouraged I was to hear, without me, that there were deacons who then got teams of people together, typically like young college guys who've got like strong backs and can do this stuff. And they set up a team and went around and shoveled all the sidewalks and driveways of the widows' homes that day when the snow hit. A deacon led in the service and organizing of serving the body, and he included other people in that role. And that's what deacons are to do, and how lay people can serve the church in that way. So meeting physical needs, body. Last two. Borders. Yeah, the security. Just thinking about how do we keep our people safe? How do we have integrity in the way that we're functioning in caring for people well? You're going to have your own ideas of what, just think safety and think security. That may be somebody needing to stand at doors and monitor who might come in. In our church, we had, we lived in a very, our church is in a very urban area of South Louisville. And we had a lot of homeless people around that lived around our church. And so we had to be mindful. And the way our church, it was an older building for us, And so the way it was set up was strange in that, you know, somebody could come in a side door and go and get access to where the nursery and the kids were, and nobody could know who was in the main sanctuary. So we just had to place people in certain spots to make sure it was just for safety reasons around the church. And so whatever that is for you, borders, deacons, it's a wonderful role to play. And that's what deacons can do. They lead in it. So somebody takes a responsibility for something like that, and then they equip other people to help and be a part of it. So we had a security team. And so there was a rotation of people. There was usually one person who was walking the premise indoors and out through the whole service. That time people were in the church. And of course, they're missing church, so we don't want them to do it a lot. So they built a big team. So somebody's maybe, one person's doing that maybe once every 2 months. But that was something we felt like we had to do to keep people safe based on the area where we lived and ministered. Last one, bums. Where do people sit? Where do people gather? That is an important part of the public gathering that we don't think about. We don't think this is important, do we? Until all of a sudden we walk in one room and there's no chairs set up. And that's where we're supposed to meet. So think about the people. And by the way, anybody who is physically able can help set up chairs, clean pews, clean the places that we gather in and meet. And so deacons, again, leading the service of that to then recruit and empower lay leaders to be able to do things along those lines of service. Okay, I'm going to stop there. Let's enter into just a couple more minutes of Q&A. Anything around service or shepherding, how it goes together over here? Ray, we got one over here.
Where would you put the music ministry into all of that? Is that service or is it shepherding or is it both?
Yeah, great question. I think it's both. So and again, that's the thing, whatever role you're thinking about, that'd be a good exercise, by the way, especially if you traveled with people on the way home. Well, what category does this fall in? Well, I think that's both. I think there is I'm a musician, so I know this part of the world of it. There is a technical side to this. There's a service part of it. There's, you know, I think the guys running sound and those who set things up on the platform. And I mean, again, making sure sound works well. Can we agree that's really important? All we got to do is let it not go well once, and we know how important it is. So that's a service role, but the people leading the music, I would say, fits more into a shepherding type category because it's typically around the public gathering. So it's both. Yeah.
Hi. Hey. Earlier you mentioned you had a meal with the elders and their families, and then they send the families off. Do you have guidelines or expectations, rules that govern the spouse of the elder or deacon that you would share, or red flags that would keep them from elevating someone into that position?
Thanks for the question. If I'm hearing you right, you're saying how much an elder's wife could make you make him an elder or not make him an elder?
Yeah, yeah.
You sound American, by the way. Where are you from?
Iowa.
Okay. Yeah. Great. So I want to be careful with this answer because scripturally I see no category of pastor wife, elder wife. So I think we need to be very careful in creating something that doesn't exist in scripture. So the calling is upon pastors, elders. And even that text in 1 Timothy 3 where it talks about the women, that some interpret that, I mean, it's neutral in the Greek. So it could act, it, sometimes it's translated just women as in female deacons. The other, some even translate deacons' wives. So I think you go either way with that, but I do not believe there is a role, there's a role for elder wife in that way. So I'm hesitant to say this is what the role is. So I first want to say that I believe all scripture teaches about this is that an elder's wife, a pastor's wife, should be a faithful church member. That's what she's called to do. And I want to say that because so often there's this really high expectation for a pastor's wife that I don't see in scripture. However, there's tons of expectations around a pastor's wife, depending on the church you walked in. And that's just a reality. Our wives know that better than anybody. And but everybody needs to understand that's the case. So even for like a lay elder, because there's typically just organic expectations placed on her, that doesn't mean she has to try to fulfill them. But I think you have to be aware those are there when you're choosing elders and to make sure she at least knows what she's signing up for. But I would also say that being healthy in this is teaching the church this principle. One of the things I had to work really hard at, and in the first 10 years, my wife did a ton, led ministries and all those kinds of things. And she basically burnt out. In our last 7 years at the church, she led very little ministries. And even though we were in a healthy church and a healthy context and taught well on these things, there were still a few people I got grief over this. They just had this expectation, my wife's still supposed to lead in this way, or she's supposed to lead in that way. And that was, so despite trying to change that understanding, it was just there. Now, that didn't make me push my wife to come back into leading, but it did make me aware of that's just kind of part of the reality of this. And so that gets inflicted onto elders' wives who are brought on. Last thing I'll say on this is that, I think then because you're an elder's wife, you have an opportunity to have an impact in the church just for ministry. And so I encourage elder's wives, you should not feel obligated to do any more than just be a faithful church member and support your husband in what he's called to do. But if you want to do more than that, you could probably have an impact in your ministry simply because you're an elder's wife. So the balance of encouraging service but not trying to make them feel obligated to have to do it. And that should inform how you choose elders in the future around that.
Brian, just a question about the service. It's been really helpful for me to have those highlighted. I think we probably neglect the importance of those and the importance of leadership in those areas, so they end up falling back onto the eldership. In some of those areas, we would have a deacon over them. I think one of the struggles we would have is finding deacons or maybe empowering deacons to really take initiative and lead. So often there's a difference, isn't there, between someone who will kind of do things as they're asked and someone who really sees it and runs with it. Any, I guess, counsel on how to raise up real leaders who will see stuff before you and take responsibility?
Yeah, and I'm sure that's a really common thing a lot of people are facing. And it's what I walked into. I walk into deacons who were pseudo elders didn't qualify as elders and weren't serving as deacons. So it's like, so I, that's what I was had to try to figure out how to work with. So as I worked with them, those two parallel tracks I talked about, as I'm working with them, doing what I can with them, I'm over here trying to raise up kind of the ideal kind of deacon that I want to help reestablish what a deacon really is in our church. And I found that guy and really invested in him, raised him up. He became a deacon. And then again, slowly, we're talking, 5 to 10 years of this. But when he became a deacon, two things happened. These current deacons saw that how he was approaching deacon ministry was different than them. One of two things happens over the course of a decade, I'm convinced, if the Spirit's working in that place. The current deacons see that man, and they are either challenged to step up and start really serving as a deacon, or they realize they're not a deacon, and they step away. I think that takes 10 years. Not all the time, obviously, but so I think raising up the person and then put them in that role, you're beginning to set a whole new bar. And it, all it can do is at least it challenges the current deacons in however they're approaching this. Now, they can stay stubborn about that for 30 years and not change and just still want to stay a deacon. That's obviously very possible. But I think that's the road to figure it out. And I think it's true with elders too. Get somebody who is truly is qualifies and truly understands what this role is and make let them come in and do it well in front of the deacons, in front of those elders. And that can challenge them to step up or hopefully to step away. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Talking about having someone stay in a role for 30, 40, whatever years, is there any inbuilt sort of review after periods of time, not necessarily in a contractual way like you might have in the secular world, but a sort of an expectation that there's an opportunity for roles to be reviewed on both sides?
In short, yes, if I'm following your question. I think there's always an opportunity to review those things. I think we should always be seeing at least the roles of elders and deacons as fluid, as flexible, and they should be evolving even if we have the right people in place anyways. I think a practical way to kind of deal with some of these things is to set term limits for elders and deacons for the sake of those people serving, as well as it's a natural flow of opportunity to remove somebody who's maybe not helpful. I mean, kind of the permanent appointment of anybody for anything is probably not a great idea for a lot of reasons. So, I think a healthy practice of that, let's say you have a term, so you have to do 3 years. This is what a lot of churches will do. 3 years of elders, serve as an elder or deacon, 3 years on, and then maybe 1 year off, and then another three, or you do three and three, and then you're forced in that seventh year to take a year off. And then you don't come back on as an elder or deacon until the church would reaffirm you for another term after that. And what that does is not only gives you a chance to have an out, but it gives them a chance to step out. But it also gives the church an opportunity to reevaluate, are you still somebody who should be an elder or deacon? I think I think a version of that is healthy. Yeah, but it just depends on the place. We got one more. We'll do one more question, and then I want to move to some time to pray together.
Just a particular question, yeah, in terms of out with the pulpit, the ministry of the word, children's ministers and things like that. Should that be under the oversight of the elders? And if so, how should that be actioned? It might not just be children's ministries. It might be other ministries like small group ministries and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's good. So the quick answer is yes, because it should all go under the elders ultimately, because they have the oversight. But yes, you got, again, you may have somebody who's overseeing children's, the teaching of the children, and who's doing that, but any teaching in the church, whether it's children's ministry, small groups, Sunday school, whatever it is, any ministry of the word needs to be directly have oversight with the elders, because that's shepherding. And you're shepherding children and teaching them the word. You also have to realize the element, and this is all throughout the New Testament. You see it in Titus and and Timothy, the call of elders to guard the flock by guarding false teaching. So that's a direct responsibility of the elders when any teaching would be going on in the church. I had a wolf in teaching Sunday school in the children in our church, and they were wolf in sheep's clothing. They were and they were mistreating my children in class, and we didn't know until somebody substituted in and saw it. And thankfully, my two oldest kids don't remember that, what was going on and the way they were treated. But you know, you never know what's going to happen in children's classes. So, and so we were able to deal with that. But yeah, my children don't remember those days. That's either it didn't harm them, or it'll come out in therapy later. We'll see. but make no mistake, the elders are called to watch over the flock. I mean, that's Acts 20 to the T, like to protect from the wolves and the false teaching.